1st to Sunday, April 30th at Disjecta in Portland. Spirit Trials is a live hip-hop soundtrack, a theatrical meditation on race, religion, and the criminal justice system. Created and performed by Delock Braithwaite, a Deaf Poetry Jam alum and National Poetry Slam winner. Again, that's Spirit Trials, happening from Friday, April 21st to Sunday, April 30th at Disjecta, 8371 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Growing up. So we'll be talking to guests who have consciously changed their accent over time, and we're also going to be talking about code switching and everything that goes into speaking English in America as an Asian American. So tune in on Friday, March 24th at 11 a.m. right here on KBOO Community Radio.
Thanks this month to all of our contributors, Annika, Tracy, Jennifer, Elena, Amico Badillo, Grace Wong, Pamela Santos, Ameo Okamoto, Soleil Ho, and Jennifer Imus. Thank you for lending us your views and voices for International Women's Day. For a list of all the music played in today's episode, check out our Facebook page at PAC Underground or on our SoundCloud and iTunes at Pacific Underground.
Pacific Underground is a production of KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Thank you very much also to our AM Public Affairs Director, Derek Crooks. Thank you, as always, to KBOO Community Radio for the studio space, love, and support. For Pacific Underground, I'm Jenny Okuyama.
And I'm Tabitha Teo.
Thanks for tuning in. The time is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is a special for International Women's Day, so keep tuning in.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Identities and Futures. Women and non-binary folks speak out March 7th at 7:30 p.m. at Holocene in Portland. Identities and Futures is an evening of performances, animation, and DJs, including DJ Kim Fizzy, Lily Croft, Jean Etheridge, Pocha Radicales, and more. Again, that's Identities and Futures, Women and Non-Binary Folks Speak Out, March 7th at 7:30 p.m. at Holocene. 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Diggy take it to the beat, diggy take it to the beat, diggy take it to the beat.
That's what we planned, but she stood me up. Roxanne, Roxanne.
Roxanne, Roxanne.
I wanna be your man.
Here's your game plan. Be sure to tune in on Thursday, March 9th, just before midnight, as we celebrate a trip back in time to Queens, New York, 1984, as Roxanne Shanté and UTFO go at it. We'll be dropping tracks from the Roxanne Wars and celebrate her brand new hip-hop biopic. That's Thursday, just before midnight, on KBOO Portland.
Well, my name is Roxanne. I don't say no, I just a cold rock, a party, and I do this show.
A mix master!
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For information, you can visit gaypdx.com. And now, Gender Illusions.
Gender Illusion. What's up with that? What is gender illusion, and how can we tell the difference between personhood and societal influence on personhood? Who is a societal influence? When creating this segment, lots of themes around personhood came up, specifically around respect. Respect, or lack thereof, from the outside world towards gender nonconforming people, including the constant erasing of trans and queer history, specifically trans and queer history of people of color, whose cultures from the beginning of human history have held special places for them. These special positions have been leaders, truth tellers, record keepers, song keepers, besties, confidants, lovers, healers, musicologists, warriors, spiritualists. The list goes on. What does non-binary mean when so much of society is capitalizing on everything gender non-conforming people create while it tells them they never existed in the first place? If Rachel Dolezal can just be black, what's the difference between that and being transgender? Well, she can't just be black. We'll get to that later. My coming out story is still happening. I can't think of one singular big aha. There have been lots of ahas. This year marks the 10th anniversary I've come out to my mom, the 3rd for my brother, and the 2nd anniversary for my dad. Unless you count that time in 2006 that I defiantly said at dinner, there is nothing wrong with the LGBT agenda. That might have been a hint. And I said it before I, or my then partner, had understood the difference between sex and gender in our own lands. I have a kidlet now, whose birthday is coming soon. He's a full-fledged teenager. We are totally out in our home. And recognizing that the English language is severely limiting, our kidlet came up with the endearing terms momix and dadix to honor the non-binary qualities and realities of being non-cishet parents. That means parents who are not the gender they were assigned at birth and not heterosexual. Who do you want to come to your birthday and slumber party? I asked this morning. Well, momix, he sometimes calls me. Like how many people? Yes. So who are the girls? I tried not to swallow too hard. Our kidlet is a little girl crazy right now, and he recently discovered he might be fluid. Let's see, he says. Olivia, Ashley, Osetti, Brianna. Okay, and the boys? Omar, Leland, Jonah. I pause. How many people who are gender nonconforming? My kidlet paused back. I think Osetti and Brianna, but I don't know. Osetti sometimes is. I don't ask, and Osetti doesn't say anything. So how do you know? I asked back. Well, he said, they're different. Different, I echoed. Fair enough. This is an ongoing conversation, and our kidlet knows that. It's okay to let ahas come. It's okay to change your mind. And it's definitely okay if you're attracted to someone trans or queer or any other of the gender spectrum, and you're 14 years old. Just don't expect them to be able to sleep over at your birthday slumber party. Coming up next, you'll hear a few more non-binary stories, some anonymous, some not. Then later a panel on the differences between transgender and transethnic. So how about you just say your name?
My name is Angie the Swan.
So awesome. I know we're not supposed to ask whether that's your name, but I personally just want to know, was that your name that you gave to yourself, or you were born with the name, the
I'm a swan, but the swan family is very, like, attached to their last name. And so they're like, us swans are this, and us swans are that. We black swans are this. So, yeah.
That's pressure.
It's a British name. So, yeah. We are... So I'm like, I'm attached. It's okay. I'll be attached to it. I was thinking about changing my name. And I'm like,
the trials.
Yeah, it's too much to like answer to a new name. I'm bad with names anyway. We've forgotten who they talking to.
Okay. I feel you.
Yeah.
I feel you.
Yeah.
All right. I always just wanted to know because you seem like a beautiful swan to me.
Thank you.
But I wasn't so. I wasn't
indeed
sure.
I fly.
Indeed, you fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool, cool. What's your coming out story? Do you have one? Did you want to share one?
I have one, but it's like kind of dumb. My folks always thought I was gay. And they said I was so much like my mom, who was gay. And she presents masculine. And so they just automatically assumed. And they would walk up to me and they would talk about girls, my cousins. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I date boys. And they were completely confused. So I didn't come out until I was ready, because I'm stubborn. And I came out when I was like 21. And it was weird because everybody's like, they don't care. A lot of people have a lot of like troubles. And my troubles was more with society and the way society dealt with me rather than my family.
I feel you. I just had the second coming out. I thought I was done, but this is actually technically my ninth coming out. I think they also saw, my mom definitely saw me dating or not. Well, for instance, first it was that the fact that I wasn't interested in marriage or guys from the get-go. So she was, in her words, fearful that I was going to be a lesbian, or that just like what that would mean. But as I got older, especially recently, going, no, that's not even, that's beside the point.
Right.
then they flipped out.
It was right. Just,
because the societal structures of what that would it mean. Like, you could like anybody and yourself not be male or female.
Right.
Was, then there was no language for that, I think, was what has made it worse.
especially when African-American and black community has been so detached from where we came from. So there's a whole lot of Bible thump talk and what gender means to them. And it's so static that even if they accept you as who you are, they cannot deal emotionally with it. It's like, okay, well, that's who you are. Great. But I cannot deal emotionally. And I'm like, you're not even in my skin. You should be fine.
Right.
It's not like I have like a virus or something.
Right.
Like it's like, you know, communicable or something. But that's the way they feel. And I've tried to have empathy only because I started off just as brainwashed. I left. I started off with the fear of being who I am. I started off getting the Bible thump every day. And so I understand that some people are not able to leave the matrix. So
it's, right.
You know, the problem is that I have so many queer friends now who are like, nope, they're the enemy. And I'm like, but I can't, because I can't see them as the enemy if we're all going to be free.
Yeah.
And so that's the biggest hurt and the biggest heartache. Like, I'm fighting for people who wish me dead. I'm fighting for people who don't want me to exist. And it hurts. So, yeah.
Oh, that is so eloquent. And that just sums up how I'm feeling lately. You know, and my brother and I thought we were really close. And when it really hit him what I was saying, he had an emotional breakdown that I've never seen before. The things that he was saying to me, I've never the words that he was coming out of his mouth. He'd never spoken that to me. He'd been a jerk before, you know, and we've definitely had our fights. But this was like, where is this coming from? Like, he's defended me from bullies in the past for different matters, that it just is unreal. That I think definitely for him, what I saw was that the social construct of Black culture and family was so tight that he was not emotionally able to deal with it. And he immediately went to the whole, like, well, I don't see you that way. I can't understand how that feels or what that means, and was internalizing it a lot, to which I was thinking, and my partner was thinking, because I was there, like, what's that got to, it doesn't have anything to do with you. It doesn't impact you. It's me and my skin. You are not experiencing this in your skin. But it was definitely just such a strict, like, we don't know ourselves in the first place. So I think it doubly blows everyone's minds in a way that I don't really feel like it blows a lot of people who are white in that situation, or at least I've seen, like, they also go through terrible things. But I think that there's another few levels of identification there already.
Right.
Whereas for people of color, I don't think that that's there.
Well, the family aspect is extremely important, and because we have to have those close ties. So when they feel like the family is threatened, and it goes to a macro level when people believe that it's bad for the race for there to be queer people, only because they're afraid of being attacked more. And they're like, well, you're hurting us because you're going to get attacked. Therefore, I'm going to get attacked. It's leftover collectivism. It's not a bad thing. The problem is that, stop looking at me. I'm not the problem. It's the oppressor. Get mad with the oppressor for attacking me. Not me. You know, it's a victim blame thing. And so not to take away the importance of the family, because that's the stuff that got me through, but the importance of love and empathy and collectivism, those things are extremely important and things that we need to actively reclaim in a society that dares to tell us not to be who we are. My biggest issue is that we jump into victim blaming constantly because we're afraid. We, you know, crab buckets, all those cliches. So I just want to make sure that people understand, like, where it comes from, and try not to, like, sometimes it'll freak you out if you get talked to that way. Like, if it's a family member or just another person that is related to somebody you care about, you freak out. You may not cry or nothing. You just, like, you know.
I definitely freaked out.
You and you may not have the right words at the time. This assumption is like, well, you should have said this. You should have told them that. You may not even have that at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know. Recently, my girlfriend came out to her parent, her family. They talked about it like it was no big deal, but her parent told me, she said, what are you, a boy or a girl? There's men and there's women. What are you? And of course, being afraid, I was like, I'm a woman. How was I going to break that completely down? Because this person understood that I wasn't cis.
Mm-hmm. They know.
You know, nobody's completely dense. They know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the issue is, how do I do it without, how do I explain this to somebody who's practically homophobic? Like, really, you know, what do you do in bed? What do you do? Those things get said to non-cis people a lot more than cis folks, even if they are queer. You get these type of questions because they don't see you as a person. Mm-hmm. They see you as a thing. You don't have personhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you don't have personhood. And if you are a woman with an X, you have less, you don't have womanhood either. So I don't mind being called she, because I don't want anyone to take my womanhood away. I've been attacked a lot because people didn't think I was a woman, or they didn't think I had womanhood. I'd say that. more so. And so many people who present masculine or who are gender nonconforming on in the spectrum get denied personhood,
mm-hmm.
and get denied womanhood and or maleness. There are femme men who get denied maleness because they're not rough enough or they're not hyper masculine enough. So there's this big issue. And so when you do come out to your family, you know, if you come out as not Christian, you get trailed or trolled, you know. If you come out as not Muslim to your family, or agnostic, or I practice African spiritualism, that's just like one of those moments, you know. So
that is powerful. Like, personhood, I feel like, could be the theme for what we're all going to be talking about, it seems like, just because you speak the truth. I mean, there's the pressure to perform one way or the other, and this presumption that those who are Christian or those in our culture that are emotionally having a difficult time digesting, because it makes them think about themselves and how they identify, mm-hmm. What one can be, the possibilities that does get taken away because they're not seeing non-binary or, you know, people as actual people, which totally intersects with being, you know, of color, where mm-hmm. we were never intended to be actual citizens. Mm-hmm. And the upshot of that is that our culture is still figuring out what that is. Like, what, who are we? You know, we're reclaiming, we're owning our history, we're finding out what that is. But I definitely understand, or I feel I understand where you're coming from with, like, you know, with, you know, what being comfortable called she, and that's another conversation I feel like comes up a lot with those who are cis, is like, well, you know, why do I have to call you this or that? Why is there so many options? And also, like, you know, like,
because I am infinite.
I am infinite. I am part of the universe. Which, of course, right? We're infinite. How many times do we have to say it?
Learning about that third genders were constantly utilized as, well, they end up being in this society as shaman or storytellers or truth tellers or prophetess or prophets or whatever. And it seems as though our path has been, like, snatched away from us through colonization. And us reclaiming our path means that nowadays we have a different language for gender. But I like third gender. I like knowing that I can have just me. I don't have to be this certain type of woman or this certain type of man or this certain type of anything for anybody. I can be me and be accepted within myself without me worrying about how other people accept that. I can accept myself and be in my own skin and be present. And that was the biggest issue with coming out in the first place. When I came out as everything. I said, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to just be thorough, just clean house. And it happened when I was like 21. So when it comes to my child, they don't like, they're like, pronouns are stupid. They don't freaking, they don't explain anything. He's like, I don't really care. My child doesn't care. It doesn't matter to him. So, it's about respect. Mm. I think a lot of the issues that, my child has gotten in school and what I've gotten is that there's not enough respect, and that goes also to personhood. You know, your child gets less respect because their parent is queer or their parent is non-binary or their parent is all these intersections, black, heavy set, because I'm heavy set, which goes into the deliciousness is good.
The deliciousness is good.
Yeah. But
it's always been an issue. It's always an issue. It's always constant. And raising a child, and that's another thing, parenthood, raising a child and getting the child to understand that they are beautiful despite the world is one of the hardest things. And I've seen that it's extremely hard in Portland.
So hard.
Yeah. And a child of color to know that they are beautiful.
Anonymous is thinking about a new name, so that's why they're anonymous. Fancy anonymous.
I actually have already chosen a name. I just am not sure if or when I want to change
it. I get
that.
Did you try on different names? Like lots of different ones? Or is it just
A little. No, not too much, though.
Do we get to hear what names you tried on? You don't have to tell us.
No.
Oh, okay. I tried on several. I tried Gary once.
Yeah.
I was angry on Gary. It was an angry name. And it made me... more angry being uptight. I'm already
interesting. One thing, so I just started volunteering with the Trans Lifeline, and they kind of suggest if you have a lot of trans friends, you might want to use a pseudonym when you answer the phone there, just in case it's anyone you know. And so that's actually like the main place where I've tried on different names.
Oh,
and
that's
kind of why I don't want to say them here, is if anyone listening that might have talked to
be
me
like
there.
Oh my gosh, that's that one person.
Yeah.
Okay, that's equitable. I understand that. That'd be awkward. Yeah. You're like, no, that wasn't me that helped you. Somebody else named that.
Yeah.
What would you like to share? Do you want me to ask some questions?
Let's go with your questions.
Okay. How about coming out story? Do you have one? Do you want to share one?
I feel like I'm still in the middle of that.
That's cool.
It was last August, actually, that I figured out my own gender. So that's still pretty new. That's 6 months-ish. Yeah.
Right on.
So in that time, I have really only come out to like friends, close friends that I still talk to. So I haven't come out to my family. I haven't come out at work. I haven't come out to like old friends. So really all I did was post on Facebook, and then people saw and understood, or they didn't.
And then
I had to tell them separately. Yeah. I haven't really done a lot in that direction yet, but I've kind of been isolating myself and only talking to the people that know, because that's a lot more comfortable.
That makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
It works.
Work
on your shit.
Yeah.
Oh, you gotta
get it. Yeah. I'm especially nervous to come out to my family because I feel like they already think I'm crazy, and this will just be more fuel for that fire. And so I want to really like build up my defenses before I do that. I want to be really sure what my gender is, and I want to feel like I don't need
my parents. Just give them a mixtape. Give them a mixtape.
Yeah.
I probably should have given my family a mixtape. Actually, no. They really needed just to have the clean house, as we were talking about earlier. I just wanted to just get it out of the way. I think they weren't really clear on that. They were just like, oh, we just thought you would still be dating cis dudes. And
when I came out as poly and bi, I like found some good articles online that I sent them to read, that in my mind that helps validate it, so they don't just think it's just me. So I'll probably do something similar when the time comes.
That's what I've been saying a lot lately. Science be our guide right now.
Yeah.
Well, that's special. Where have you found out about non-binary trans and queer history?
Mostly through friends. I keep finding more and more people that are non-binary or trans or both, and mostly like interacting online. They'll post a bunch of stuff, and then I'll go read the links. That's pretty much always it.
It's like online is like this big, awesome container of information. I feel conflicted about that these days.
Yeah.
And yet, like, it's there. Like, I also feel like you can't ignore facts, per se. It takes some fact-checking, but there's just so much online anyway. So your family doesn't know yet. You've given them some articles that might have tipped them off, it sounds like.
No, I gave them articles about being poly and bi.
About being poly and bi. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. in your coming out process, how do you find that that is, do you find that it's intersecting your relationship with your family already as you are becoming more aware of who you are, and what does family mean to you?
Yeah, so it was August that I like had this big realization moment when I finally, I'd been questioning for a couple years, but I finally had like this one moment where I figured out my gender. And since then, life has been an emotional roller coaster. Like, there's been some extreme highs and some extreme lows, but overall, I've been a lot happier because I feel like I understand myself now and I'm more authentic in my relationships with other people. And that has still been true with my family, even though I haven't told them my gender. I still just feel more myself when I talk to them. And they comment, like, they've commented on it. They can see that I'm happier now. Mm. The other thing is, like, my gender presentation has changed a little bit. And sometimes I get scared when I see them, and I feel like I should dress in femme as, like, armor so that they don't figure out anything too soon, but it doesn't really work. you all on the radio can't see this, but I cut my hair pretty short, and I was so afraid my stepmom was going to hate it when I saw her, and she always comments on my hair and tells me it's ugly, usually. And this time she didn't, though. She said it was so cute.
Oh, that's...
Yeah. I used to have the side shave, and she hated that. And so when she saw me with all short hair, she said, "That looks so much better than that lopsided haircut you had before."
Straight haters.
Yeah. This is just, I feel so passionate about this subject because that immense pressure to present a certain way. We were talking a little bit about that when you're on your family, which can have like a even tighter construct for you to work in. I got that too. And still, like, I think the reason why my mom lost her complete cool over coming out was like, she's always has when I've pushed, like, you can't tell me who I am. But this time, right, we had a second coming out is what I've been calling it. But like, she was buying me dresses and purses straight up until like this month, like straight up, wow. Like what? And having something to say about my hair and all of that as if we care or like, as if like it's relevant. Oh, my heart goes out to you. Whatever you want to do with your hair, it's you that we love.
It's only my stepmom that seems to care. Everyone else is just, they take me as I am.
Don't you just want to sneak into their rooms at night and shave off some of those locks while they're sleeping just so they wake up and have to? That's vindictive. I'm just talking.
That you don't
want to
see. You'd be like, oh, that's what y'all
want. Probably.
I'm good.
I just really like... That, I don't know, I guess I hate this idea that if there's like one small change, regardless of how somebody identifies, the world is ending. Like, that hairstyle is awful. Well, what's it to you? It might be something like different next spring, or like, also, who asked you to work for Cosmo? Like, you don't work for Cosmopolitan or anybody. Like, who asked you? You and your two bits.
Major. My family members all felt closer to me than I felt to them. And I just, when I figured out that my gender is not what I thought it was, I realized that that's why. Because the person that they thought they were close to wasn't really me. And if I couldn't be myself, I couldn't form those same kinds of close relationships with them. And so, like, especially in my adult life, it's always been, like, all different family members calling me, complaining that I don't call them, wanting to hang out with me, not understanding why I don't visit more. And now I finally understand why. There's a different... level there. It's a disconnect.
Cognitive dissonance, I think is what we call that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't anticipate that with my family. I had a similar experience. Hearing these common themes are really important and validating. This whole, like,
that's cool. You're actually the first person that has said me too to that one.
Oh, really?
And I've talked about this
me
with
too.
A handful of non-binary people.
I had the same, like, and also just with my brother, who also lost his complete mind when I really came out all the way. And I, you know, he was definitely going back to, like, family ties and questioning, not just questioning, but, like, challenging. He called it questioning, but it was challenging. Like, okay. How could you be? Because I saw you date that one guy. How could you be when you... Right.
Doesn't come out.
Also, like, it's my anybody's prerogative, but also just like, why aren't we hanging out more? That would come up a lot, and it was really communities are learning how to do that, which is an interesting segue. How do you carry your community as you've just opened up, and how do you feel about that in general as you are learning what your identity is, how you want to express that, how you want to tell people?
Can we go back to the previous question for a second?
Yeah. Oh, did we not even answer that? Sorry. Well, see, this is so deep. Sorry.
We did, but it's okay. I feel like I only talked about the negatives, and there's a lot of positives.
Oh, well, go on. Yeah, it's about you. Really go on. Tell
awesome things about being queer and trans,
yes,
non-binary, which
preach.
In my own life, it means I can do what I want, and I don't have to do what other people tell me I'm supposed to do, and that feels amazing, and I can love whoever I want, and they can be whatever gender they want to be, and it doesn't really matter. Like, I love people of all genders, and that's pretty amazing. And also, being able to define my own life in my own terms like that, rather than just doing what everyone told me to do, I've been able to take that attitude and approach to other things in life and just kind of tear apart a lot. So figuring out other things are BS, and then I'm like, I'm not going to do this thing that I've been taught I'm supposed to do because it's BS. And I think being queer is a big part of what helped me figure that out. So that's awesome.
That is awesome. So, are you anonymous? Anonymously infinite gender?
Yes, anonymously infinite gender.
Do you have a coming out story that you wanted to share?
I'm still coming out. I feel like that's in process. I've only just told my parents that I am genderqueer, and a little bit of what that means, although I feel like most of those conversations are still probably ahead of us. However, it was very empowering for me to tell my parents about my identity, and I feel like a weight has been lifted, and that I'm now more expressive of myself than I have been maybe as long as I've lived. So that's certainly powerful.
Yeah, totally powerful. How do you define being infinite gender or non-binary or fluid? What does that mean to you?
For me, I identify as gender fluid, and my experience is somewhat masculine, somewhat feminine, although I felt out of place amongst cis boys and cis girls both growing up. I always gravitated toward seeking community with girls, with ladies' bodies, and felt like I had more in common with female
But then, of course, I was looked at as a male, and so didn't really ever find true community in within that. So I've always felt a little bit outcast in that sense.
Some of the things we were talking about earlier today with others who wanted to talk about their narratives is personhood and how there's this tremendous pressure to, because we're seen as things, not people, being non-binary, and that includes fluid, that there's this pressure to perform either male or female. But inversely, having those gender experiences taken away from us, or the attempt to take that away, like, for instance, not being seen or treated as feminine when you are, or not being seen or treated as masculine when you are, or being treated as both, if that is your experience. How has coming out affected your personhood?
And that is a very good question. Honestly, I'm not sure how to answer that. I don't feel like I've really come to a conclusion about how I want to portray myself or how I want to be recognized going forward. That might be I just don't know.
I think it's okay not to know. So we've got a cat here in the background playing the piano. Obviously, they feel neglected during International Women's Day, that they're willing to play this little tune there. I think it's okay not... I mean, I know it's okay not to know. The themes of personhood and future have come up a lot during this project, and how inadequate our language is. Another thing that has come up is how indigenous people, ancient and African peoples, other countries and other cultures have a long history of acknowledging gender fluid, transgender people, infinite gendered people, and how our place in society was to hold and support our communities. And that's come up a lot in this project, whereas, you know, with colonialism, there's a whitewashing of erasing that history, you know, which means we're all in this position of writing the future, even though it's an ancient past.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find yourself supporting community or supporting what it means to be gender fluid as we sort of reclaim and yet rewrite a future with a new language?
Well, that's a great question. I have some experiences that speak to that, although, again, I don't feel like I've really come to a firm conclusion for myself about that. My first exposure to the idea of third gender was studying shamanism, and specifically the Winkte, Native American First Nation tribe. Thank you, Piano Cat.
Piano Cat. If there was any doubt that this is a live interview, there's a Piano Cat to prove it to us.
Right.
As you were saying, Anonymous.
As I was saying, briefly, what I learned in studying was that the Winkte not only recognize third gender, two-spirit was the more polite term. There was Berdage, which was a white descriptor for that gender role, and I understand, not very polite, but it was a historical anthropological term for a while. So we studied it in that context. And then Two-Spirit, which I related to very strongly in myself, Two-Spirit being male and female spirits, both in a single body, whether it's male body, female body. And that's still a term that I think describes myself well. However, I've come to realize too that it's also a cultural term, and that I am not of that ancestry, nor am I of that tribe. But anyway, so I've kind of backed off of naming myself Two-Spirit, out of respect for all that I don't understand from not being in that community or of that tribe, and as a mostly white person wanting to respect the actual roles and my own lack of understanding for just what those roles are in Native cultures.
Hmm. So, with that wisdom, how do you define yourself going forward?
Well, gender fluid also speaks to my gender. And that's kind of the term that I've adopted, at least for the moment. And that suits me. It suits me all right.
Sparkle pants, if you consider that?
Not specifically. I'll put that in my back pocket.
Okay.
Lover drawers.
Lover drawers.
Yeah, I could answer to that.
Angel pants?
Hey, angel pants has come up maybe a time or two.
Those seem equitable.
Yes. Entirely fair and gender neutral.
Right? That's a segue into a great subject. What gender neutral terms do you find particularly positive for you on the subject of language? What do you like to hear from friends and lovers and sweet ones?
I really enjoy having my femininity recognized, partially because I exhibit masculine in a lot of my day-to-day and especially work life. So I feel especially good having my lovers recognize my femme side. And in terms of endearments, I like feminine endearments. I like flowers and romantic gestures of that sort.
All right, can we get to the dirty? Like, what I want to know, like, names. Like, babe, that's a really popular one that comes up. Hey, babe.
I feel like babe is almost agendered now.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. I like lover. I like hey girl.
Hey girl.
Yeah.
For those who can't see, Anonymous is blushing.
May
right
or
now.
May not be blushing right now. I
girl.
Plead the fifth.
All right. Okay. That's lovely. That's really...
You have been listening to Gender Illusions. I'm Zella Zellis Marchant, and this is our panel. I've got in the studio Anonymous, number
hey.
One. Anonymous, number two, couldn't join us this evening. And Angie the Swan, will be arriving soon, I hope. If not, that's cool too. We're going to hold down the fort. So, anonymous, number one, thank you so much for being a part of the narrative.
This was really nice. It actually helped me clarify things I've been thinking about lately.
Cool. We were just talking about how many shenanigans were happening that didn't make it into the actual narrative portion. Lots of side topics that we'll try to dive into. I had mentioned, you know, in the blurb and to folks who wanted to participate that we'd be talking about the difference between trans ethnic and transgender, which should be common sense, but
should be.
But isn't, and there's a lot lost in translation with that. I think a lot of people don't, you know, they've heard the term, but they don't understand the roots of it. So, and then with the, I was going to say the rise of racial dolezal, but I don't think we could define that rise to what, we're not, that remains to be seen. But it's, you know, she's become a textbook example of, what's that character I was talking about in Final Fantasy, the Chikaboo? That really annoying bird-like thing for those Final Fantasy nerds. You know what I'm talking about. Like,
I am not a Final Fantasy nerd.
The bird comes on. Well, I'm not. My primary is really into it. Okay. And so I've had to live with this. And like the bird comes on scene and makes a lot of noise and is annoying. And the music changes. And it's like as if this bird is like the most important thing. But it does not change the plot at all. Okay. And that's what I feel like folks like dolezal are all about. Where it's
that's
like,
a good metaphor.
You just interrupted that. It seems really important, but has nothing to do with anything right now. You've got a lot of evolutions to go yet. I think what people don't understand or, you know, is that A, it's a white supremacist rebranding of a real phenomenon or situation that can involve kids who are adopted, you know, into a different nationality, but there's clear differences between being born how you are and national identity, which you are not born knowing.
Right.
You don't, there's no babies that say Africa, like the first, I mean, maybe they would. You know, no baby knows instinctually what its nation is. Right. That's just not, is non-existent.
They don't even know the concept of a nation.
They don't even have the concept of a nation. So here's the first difference is the socialization aspect of it. Gender, there's over 50 genes that we now know determine gender. Also, different systems of your body have a gender. Your brain can be male. Your body can be female. Different organs can be different combinations. You know, it's not just XXXY. There's a lot of other extra chromosomes involved in that, which makes almost what seems a limitless possibility of gender and sex, which is different. Gender and sex is different. Right. And there are socializations that come into gender. We've been talking about that and hearing about that and like the narratives of just like being pressured to perform male or having this idea of what one gender is or not.
Right.
Anonymous, you got anything to share about that or funny metaphors for who dolezal is? I don't know. Don't leave me hanging.
I was just thinking about how chromosomes and genitals and hormones and all those things don't determine a person's gender. Mm-hmm. Like the gender happens in the brain and that's there from birth regardless. Mm-hmm. So no matter how a person is raised or socialized, their gender is what it is and you can't change it through socialization.
Truth.
Like, truth. You know.
Truth.
A girl that's raised among men all her life isn't going to become male just by being socialized with men.
Right. That too. I think the second difference that I can always think of is, you know, even from people of color, we're hearing, you know, from those like, well, why can't, you know, in the name of unity, could we just be? And that's like, okay, first of all, there's generational trauma that is passed down that, you know, in the case of this situation, white people did not, you know, take experience. Also, the system that we have, white people, cishet people benefit from that, and trans people have not and do not benefit from that whatsoever.
Right.
No one's rolling up with Rolls Royces throwing
flowers at us just for being alive to generalize, or, you know, saying, yeah, come on in, here's the health care that you want, or any of that. That, you know, that is a huge difference. And for somebody to just claim to have that generational trauma, to just claim to have that ethnic experience, is stealing it, which is perpetuating what has happened for, in this contemporary context, like 300 years. So you can't fake that. If you really want to be that, you have to earn that, is the case in point here. You don't get to just,
what do you mean by earn that?
Well, you know, if you love a culture, you're going to spend time with it. You're going to experience the experiences of that culture. You can't just say, I'm going to get $300 extensions and now I'm African American because I've got $300 extensions and a really awful mystic tan. So, therefore, I am black, you know, and I think that's, you know, this is where the Donezal schism is. You don't get to just buy your way into something.
But I think I'm misunderstanding you, because it sounds like you're saying that a white person could immerse themselves in black culture and become black. Like, when you say you have to earn it, that's what it sounds like you're saying, but I don't think that's actually
what
you're saying.
That's not what I'm saying. Okay.
That's why I just wanted you to clarify that.
although, you know, for those who have, you know, their white parents with African kids, and some of my students outside of the studio are in this, you know, demographic, and this is where I think a lot of people or mixed race families go, well, what about?
Right.
And I say that's different, though. You know, we're a mixed race home. My primary partner's, you know, white. They're not going to claim to be black,
right,
indigenous ever. But, you know, they, by being with me, experience the marginalization that I go through. And we talked a huge amount about that. Like, because now you are with me, you're going to experience and see things that you never would before.
Right.
And it's really hard. It's very noble. I said back in the beginning that you want to be with me, but the reality is this. And also there's a kidlet involved.
Yeah.
A kid involved, of color. And you're going to see some terrible, you know, monsters come up in terms of confidence and teaching that kid to be confident. So these are things where somebody, you know, comes along and says to a culture that is still trying to find their identification, that is being kept from them, a culture or cultures who are dehumanized, and saying, well, now I'm this, now I'm one of you. It's like, no, that you can't, it's not, we are more than the hair extensions. We are more than our melanin. We're more than our vernacular. And these are a shared social experience. And that's another thing. You can't just copy a social experience.
Right.
You know, you can't. Yeah, then Jenna, our board op, just whispered / yelled at me, or then you're just alt-ethnic. And there you have it. It's true, though. You know, like, are we insane? Then, you know, material things are what make us who we are. No, that's not. It's just creating and strengthening that narrative of, like, I'm a thing, not a person. Some of the other topics we didn't get to, like, I didn't get to play in the narratives was, like, what is really awesome about being non-binary and genderqueer and all of that. We went into a little bit, but I just wish there was, like, a whole other hour to talk about all the...
Right?
Yeah. And it's not just glitter. It's not just the glitter, like, and not, you know, for the record, not everybody loves the glitter. Some people are confetti people.
One thing I love is when I go shopping for clothes, I'll go to whatever department. I'll switch back and forth between the men's department and the women's department and just pick whatever feels the most like me. But see, then someone who actually is cisgender might not get the same joy out of that I get.
You know, that's where I kind of feel like, wah, 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 wah. You know, like, I'm pretty amazing to be us. I don't know. You know, though, I think there's a little, this is probably not PC, it's a little queer of all of us. Like, I'm sure there's probably people who, like, this kind of ties back into, like, non-binary art and culture and how it's capitalized on, while also, like, we're being told that we right. don't exist, because then there's this whole, like, agender clothing revolution of sorts going on now, you know, because of those who've just been playing with gender or just questioning or just kind of, you know, realizing, hey, clothes are clothes.
You know what's so frustrating about that, though, is that the like quintessential agender look is like, you know, thin white body that mostly has like masculine clothes on.
Taint me.
And that isn't me. I'm white, but I am a large white person, and those clothes just aren't available.
What do you
mean
thick-alicious? I think we decided the term was thick-alicious. I think that's the term. I think it's a healthier term. But you're right, though.
I can go for that.
Right. Like, I feel like as I transition, clothes have always been my way to like identify and help with the dysphoria personally, and just express joy.
Yeah.
And that can be really tricky when I identify mainly like agender, and the clothing options are totally not for a Badao, a tribal, you know, mm-hmm. DNA person.
Yeah.
It's just, that's a pretty awesome. What are other awesome things? Oh, the dance parties. But everybody knows that.
Dance parties.
You know what I really love? That I want to brag about? That's really awesome.
Brag.
The cuddle puddles.
Yes.
I think what I love the most is the love in the community when we've connected with each other.
Yeah.
In a way that it's just really clear. I don't think other, you know, folks who are outside of that connect in the same way. And I don't know if it's just the pressures that we're under. I have no idea. Or just the infiniteness that we've been talking about. That feeling of infiniteness that we see in each other. And we just want to be like, I just want to eat you up.
Yeah. You know? For me, it's just like, it feels so good to be me. And I look at someone else and I'm like, it must feel so good to be you too. And let's just celebrate that.
Yeah. I love that. I love it, love it, love it. Love it. What else do we love? Bananas. I like bananas. It actually has nothing to do with what
we're talking about. I like all fruits equally.
Do you like all fruits equally?
No, but I feel like that's an important
thing. I don't like kumquats.
I love to watch people eat kumquats, especially if it's for the first time.
That's also something cool about being infinite gender. I think you end up seeing a lot better YouTube videos. I think you end up finding a lot of interesting artistic expression that may lead to conversations like this.
Like, I don't like the kumquat. Like once you watch a few, they just show up in your recommendations.
Yes. Yes. It's like, why even bother with regular cable? Our real lives are so amazing on their own. Well, we're going to wrap it up. Poor Angie. She just texted me. Just didn't quite make it. That's okay. She'll show up and we'll do coffee or something. But I want to thank everybody. Thank you, Anonymous, number one, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You are beautiful.